Robert's coming in. I think I hear him yelling out there. He knows we're gonna start. All right, come on in, buddy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to THC. I'm so happy that you're freaking joining me, even though I took a week off last week because it was spring break. And I was like, you know what? It's spring break. I'm gonna take a spring break. But I actually just worked on new episodes all week. So when you're listening to this, tomorrow is going to be 420. So maybe pause and listen tomorrow instead. I wouldn't even be mad when we could like smoke together for 420. Albert is being fucking insane right now. I'm so sorry. Give me one second. He has not calmed down, but I'm just going to ignore him. I have two other cats and a boyfriend that he could bother, but he chooses to bother me every time. Anyway, I hope everybody's doing well. I hope everybody's having a great time. I hope you're so excited for 420. I hope you have plans. Guess what? I do, because I am a medical marijuana card holder. So let's just take a moment of thank fucking God for that. And I hope that you get to enjoy the day as well. So anyway, moving forward, I see how you guys liked the guest episode. It has like literally three times the amount of views that you guys don't watch this. It has like three times the amount of listens that like any other episode has. So like, I hear ya and I'm with ya. I am searching for co-hosts right now. I honestly would love to sit and do this with somebody else. I don't, sitting alone in my bathroom is really difficult. So I'm hoping to have a co-host soon, or at least have guests coming on more regularly. I hear you, man. I'm with you. So we'll get to that. Today we are talking about kind of a famous case that I honestly did not know that much about. We're talking about Natalie Holloway and this whole fucking shebang. This is a crazy ass case and it's really fucking confusing. So just buckle up. Just buckle up and we're just gonna get right into it. All right. So, whoa, my throat just made the weirdest sound. Anyway, Natalie Holloway, she was an 18-year-old. She had just graduated high school and she was going on a class trip to Aruba. But before we get, you know, to all that, I just want to talk about Natalie, who she was. She was like very smart. She had a full ride scholarship to the University of Alabama. She was a straight A student. She just like, she was a great kid. Everybody really liked her. And her disappearance was like huge in the media and like in her area, her community. And you know, it's been crazy. A lot of you probably already know about this case. I didn't, and it was like fucking whack to research. But anyway, she's on this class trip. They go to Aruba with 125 students and seven chaperones, which like, I am not from like this kind of community. So I was like, oh damn, like that's kind of crazy. Like that's, they had a full, like they had the all-inclusive package at a resort. And the cool thing about Aruba is that you only have to be 18 to drink. So all of these newly graduated seniors who are now going into college have free alcohol, free food, and it's just a fucking party. And essentially that's what it was. They got there on May 26th, 2005. It was, they have fun and like, it's a good trip, but like, I'm like that. I'm like, I'm only 21, but I always feel like I'm like 47 because I'm like, oh my God, you guys need to be careful. Like you are children. Like it just gives me anxiety to even think about. Like they're kids and I'm only 3 years older than them. It freaks me out. Sometimes I feel like I'm like in my second life already, but they have a good trip until Natalie doesn't show up on the bus back to the airport to go home. So let's back up a little bit. The night before, it was May 29th, Natalie and all of her friends were at a bar called Carlos and Charlie's. It's kind of like a Senior Frogs or like Margaritaville type place. And she was with all of her friends. They had been to this bar before and they met up with a man named Joran Vandersloot and his two friends, brothers Deepak and Satish Kalpo. So they were like dancing. Joran and Natalie were like hitting it off. They were dancing and drinking and having a good time. And like, it was just kind of like, you know, partying. The bar closed at 1 and then everybody was like about to head back to the hotel and Natalie was seen getting into the car with Joran and his friends. And then she left. And none of her friends were like, wait, no, Natalie, come with us. Or like, Natalie, are you sure you want to do this? Or like, Natalie, do you know how to get back to the hotel? Nope. They just let her get in a car with a stranger and go. And then nobody has ever seen her again. And that is literally the last thing that anybody knows about this case. Like, for sure, for sure. So haunting. I don't know. I don't want to put like blame on the friends, but like, can we just all agree to not let our friends get in the car with strangers and just leave, especially in a foreign country? Like, I feel like we shouldn't have to tell each other this. I feel like this was 2005. It's been like, what, 16 years? Life has changed. Like, we have Ubers and like, I think we're all a little bit more aware of our surroundings now. I don't think that, I really fucking hope that this wouldn't happen today. I hope we all have better friends than that. I hope that we are all better friends than that. But you all need to just promise me that you're never gonna do this. Thank you. Do not let your friends get in the car with strangers. So, on the morning of May 30th, when Natalie didn't show up on the bus to go back to the airport, all of her friends were like, oh, ha ha ha, like, she's probably just hungover and asleep. Like, where did she end up last night? But I have a lot of questions because she had roommates in this hotel. You guys had to realize that she wasn't there all night, all morning when you got ready for the airport. You had to realize that her stuff was still not ready to go. Like, I really, really want to talk to her friends and her roommates because there's just like some missing links in there that don't sit right with me. I don't know why. I just don't trust her friends very much. And that's just one woman's opinion. So first they're making jokes, but then pretty quick they realize that like she never made it back to the hotel the night before. Why didn't you realize this earlier? I don't know. Couldn't fucking be me. But pretty much it turned really serious really quickly. And they called Natalie's mom, Beth. Beth and her husband, Natalie's stepdad, they went to Aruba that night and they went on a rented jet. So yeah, you heard that, a rented jet. They live a different life than I live or than like I'm used to other people living. So good for them. And they have the resources to look for Natalie. So good for them. Her stepdad's name is Jug, which is just funny to me. I don't know why, but they work with the police and they work with Natalie's friends and they try to like track her last known movements. Natalie's dad is there at this point too. I can't remember his name. And for some reason, I want to say it's Dave. I'm almost positive it's Dave. Okay, so they work with the police and they trace her last known movements to the casino at the hotel and then to the bar and then to Joran Vandersloot. So her friends were like, yeah, she had been hanging around with Joran. We had seen him like one or two times on this trip already. Like, we were kind of familiar with him, but tonight they were definitely like flirting with each other and like, yeah. So the local authorities instantly recognized Joran's name because his dad is a judge and his godfather is the police chief. Oh my god, so crazy how that shit happens. So they recognize him not only as that, but also as somebody who, quote, takes advantage of tourists. Him and his friends were known to, like, roofie young girls and then, like, gang rape them before they leave for vacation. Why are they well-known rapists but still not in jail? Like, how can you have somebody who is known for doing these things? A group of people at that who are known for doing these things, but they're not in jail and they just keep doing it and there's no punishment. And oh wait, it's because his dad is a judge and his godfather is the police chief or the commissioner. So it's just fucking whack how this stuff happens. So they get to Joran. They go to Joran and they're like, hey, do you got any information? And at first he denies everything. He denies even knowing Natalie. And then he finally says, they like pushed some buttons and they were like, okay, like we know that you were with her last night. And then finally he's like, yeah, actually I left with Natalie and with the Calpo brothers and they went to a lighthouse on the beach. And then he dropped her off at the hotel around 2 a.m. And he was like making up this whole fucking story and like doing this whole thing saying that Natalie was drunk and saying that she was stumbling. He never like outright said she was drunk, but he was like, she was stumbling and I watched a security guard help her inside. But this is an absolute blatant lie because the security footage shows that she never made it back to the hotel that night. So like they know that he's lying to their face. Plus his timeline just doesn't add up because you're gonna tell me they left the bar at 1:30. And then they drove to the beach And they hung out at the beach for a little while, and then they drove back to her hotel room, and she was at her hotel all by 2 a.m. I mean, it's possible if they only spent, like, 30 seconds at the beach, but then, like, why did you go there in the first place? So, yeah, it doesn't make sense. So then they're like, Euron, we know Euron the moron. We know you're fucking lying. So then he changes his story, and we're gonna find that this is, like, a very repetitive pattern for him. He changes his story all the fucking time. And this time he says that Deepak, Satish, Natalie, and himself went to his house. They went to Euron's house and they got there around 1:40 a.m. which checks out if they left the bar around 1:30. And then he asked Natalie if she wanted to go inside so that they could hook up and then he would get her a cab back to the hotel. But then he changes his story again and he tells another different story and says that Natalie, which I feel this, Natalie wanted to see sharks, so he drove her to the beach and they saw sharks and then he left her at the beach. Which I always want to see sharks. I love sharks. I have this weird dream about swimming with sharks. I would love to swim with sharks. Oh my god, it's like my dream. Ugh, like, if I could do anything on this planet, I would swim with sharks. But anyway, Natalie wanted to see sharks. I love that about her. And for another, why did Euron just leave her there? I don't fucking know. But guess what? The police are not on our side. Are you surprised? Because I'm not. They refused to even consider Natalie a missing person for the first 48 hours, aka the most important hours of a missing person's case, because they're like, this is Aruba. She could just be off with a guy or hungover. This happens all the time. She's fine. Which, like, heh? Like, you're okay with young girls going missing all the time? Is that what you're saying? A little weird. I wonder how many are, like, actually still missing because they refuse to even look at it. So on June 1st, 2 days later, a team of about 100 locals and tourists started a search team for Natalie, and they, like, started searching the area, just literally looking for any sign or any clue of her being anywhere. And eventually, the Aruban police joined the search, and they brought in, like, search teams from Texas, they brought in, like, the Dutch Marines and, like, fighter planes to, like, do, like, infrared searches, but they had no sign of Natalie at all. Like, there was no evidence she had been anywhere. So her dad, oh my gosh, it's in my notes, her dad's name is Dave. Oh, I love it. Her dad, Dave, was in Aruba, and her parents were just, I don't even know why that's in my notes, because poor note taking on my part. But anyway, they were all in Aruba and her parents were just, like, on TV making pleas for their daughter just to come home or for whoever had her to please let her go. And like I said earlier, Dave and Beth, her parents, they were divorced and they had been divorced for, like, a good amount of time. So this was probably fucking Akko Taco. Like, I couldn't imagine if I went missing and my divorced ass parents had to come together. Had to come together, and I'm sorry, that's just comical at the thought. So finally, on June 9th, Euron and the Calpo brothers are taken into custody. And again, they just keep changing their story. They have a different story every single day. And about a month later, on July 4th, they release the Calpo brothers. But then the judge says that Euron is going to be held for another 60 days, but he doesn't really say why. And, like, this story is really confusing. The timeline is confusing because it goes back and forth. Euron is in custody, but he's not being arrested or charged with anything. The justice system is different there. I don't really understand it and how it works there. Honestly, it's always so fucking confusing. Why does this stuff always, why can't it just be, like, really clear as day? But anyway, before we get to the police's theories of what might have happened at this point, let's take a quick smoke break. I'm not sure what you guys are smoking, but I love chillaxing and smoking some CBD. And I also love buying new things to smoke my CBD from. The issue is that nice glass is expensive and I am a picky bitch, like I'm sure you are too. But the good news is I am partnering with an online shop called I Sell Glass to get you 20% off your purchase. Get yourself something new. You freaking deserve it. Go to isellglass.shop and use the offer code TRULYHIGHCRIME for 20% off your purchase. That is isellglass.shop and use the offer code TRULYHIGHCRIME at checkout for 20% off of your purchase. Of course, you have to be at least 18 and of legal age to smoke in your area, and these pieces are for legal substances only. So if you're looking for something new or even just a little gift, make sure you go to isoglass.shop and use the offer code TRULYHIGHCRIME for 20% off your entire purchase. So the police put together this theory that Yoron had taken Natalie either back to his apartment or to the beach and was planning on assaulting her and had roofied her. And then she had overdosed or had a bad reaction to the roofie because, you know, it's a roofie. And she started like foaming at the mouth and then passed out. And then Yoron maybe thought she was dead and then he just left her there. But the thing that this puts this all to rest, like this couldn't have been what happened, there were fishermen in the area that night, and they said that they were absolutely sure that nobody else was there that night, and quote, it would have been impossible that they were there without us having seen them, unless all three of us were blind and deaf, end quote. So, pretty certain, he sounds pretty sure that there was nobody else there, and they had been there all night, and like, I mean, I feel like when it's the middle of the night, and, like, it's quiet. If there was somebody, like, being attacked or foaming at the mouth or something happening, you would hear it or at least, like, hear it in the distance, you know? So the police were investigating another theory that maybe Natalie was raped and killed near that same hut. Because 9 days before Natalie had gone missing, a woman was on this little morning walk on the beach near those fishermen huts, and she was almost raped. She had seen a man sitting like in that picnic area near his car, and then when she got a little bit nervous and started walking faster, maybe wanted to turn around, he jumped out of his car naked and blocked her and like tried to get her in his car. But she was a fucking bad bitch, and she got the attention of other people, and he like ran away. He like threatened to kill her and ran away. So she was okay, just severely traumatized for the rest of her life. And this woman and a few people believe that the same thing that happened to her happened to Natalie, except they actually got her. And the police looked into it too, but those fishermen were there and they didn't see anybody. So this theory is just kind of pretty much checked out. Then, in mid-June, this guy, Steve Crows, who worked as a DJ on a party ship called The Tattoo, and it was like 1,000, like, I don't remember the measurements, but it was called The Tattoo and it was near where Natalie was staying. And he came forward voluntarily and was like, I saw Yoron and the Calpo brothers drop Natalie off at the hotel that night. But we all already know that that's a damn-ass lie because we know that Natalie made it back into the hotel that night. So, like, what the fuck? So they were kind of suspicious of him, so they questioned him. And he said that he was working that night and that he slept on the party boat so that it was impossible that he had any involvement with Natalie. But guess what? That stuff is also able to be checked, and it was also a damn-ass lie. He didn't work that night, and he didn't sleep on the boat. So, like, why the fuck did you lie about that? He was arrested for giving false evidence on June 17th. And like the other guys, he just had a bunch of weird stories that just kept changing. And it's, like, it's odd. And he was arrested and, like, held for a while, but not for anything about Natalie, just for giving false evidence. So at this point, the police are at a dead fucking end, and they just think that Yoron had something to do with it, but they can't completely connect him to it. And I just want to say why, because he's confessed to it. Like, he has said that he, like, had something to do with being with her that night. Like, but I guess I get it, because there's no, like, solid evidence. They don't have any body. They don't have any proof that they went anywhere. Like, they can't check any of his stories out, so... yeah. And every single lead they get, they follow. And like, this was huge in the media and it was huge everywhere. It was big in the US. I mean, Natalie was like this beautiful blonde rich girl who went missing. Like, so she gets a lot of attention and nobody has seen anything. Like, it gets a lot of attention and it gets a lot of people being like, ooh, I think I maybe saw her. And a lot of just like those random leads that, I mean, everybody wants to be involved with this. It's so shitty, but like, you know how that happens. And they chased every single lead. They literally looked for everything, but they never found any trace of her. They're at a dead fucking end. Yoron is still in custody. So are the Calpo brothers and so is Steve Crows, but it's unsure why. Like, nobody, they're not being charged with anything. Nobody really knows what's going on. And they're like, hey, didn't Yoron's dad have some connection to the mafia? Let's arrest him. Like, it just kind of came out of nowhere for everybody, and a lot of people think that the Aruban police really just fucked this whole case up. They didn't search for her that first 48 hours, they haven't made any progress on the case yet, and most people were like, it's pretty clear that Yoron did this. Like, you have to just be working hard to find something to get him, because it's pretty clear he did it. But I don't fucking know. They just weren't. But they arrested Yoron's dad, Paulus Vandersloot. I don't know, because when you Google his name, it's Paul, but when you hear anybody else say it, they say Paulus. So I'm going to say Paulus, because they're... Okay, so they arrest him, Paulus, Judge Paulus Vandersloot, because they're just like, I don't know, fucking maybe. And they thought that maybe since he had mafia experience, he could help hide the body, but I literally could not find anything about him being in the mafia, so I have no idea where that came from. But there was, like, most people believe that Yoron's dad did have something to do with helping Yoron hide the body, or, like, just anything like that. It's really gross. There's a couple theories we're going to talk about later, but he's garbage. I don't like him. He's trash. But also, it's kind of easy as fuck to get rid of a body when you're just on a tiny little island in the middle of the ocean. You can just, and I know this is going to sound really fucked up, but you can just drop it in the ocean. So I don't understand why the whole, like, hiding her body thing is, like, what they're focusing on, because it wasn't that difficult for them. So on June 26, 2005, both Steve the DJ and Yoron's dad were released from jail because they had nothing to hold them on. They were just, like, kind of chilling there. So then there is a massive search going on constantly. So there's a massive search going on constantly for Natalie, both from locals and her family and police. Like, they are just always looking. And because, like I said, like, they were rich white people and Natalie was a beautiful rich white girl, the case got so much media attention. There was a $1 million reward out for information on Natalie's case. They were taking any lead. They were draining ponds to look for evidence. They were, like, just looking for her. Anything that even, like, there was, like, a hair stuck to a piece of duct tape, they were like, sure, test it for Natalie's DNA. Of course it wasn't, but, like, anything that they found that could have been Natalie's remains, they tested it to check if it was Natalie. And it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because they would, like, find skulls and they would find bones or, like, hair fragments and stuff, and instead of just, okay, they'd be like, okay, it's not Natalie, and then just toss it to the side. Like, that's somebody's skull. Whose skull is it? Like, why are we just being like, okay, well, it's not Natalie, then who is it? I don't know. I don't like it. It just kind of freaks me out. I wish I could, like, investigate those skulls a little bit further. But anyway, Yoron was released in September of 2005 because they didn't have enough to hold him there. But, like, I'm pretty sure he just kept confessing to it over and over again and then recanting his statement. But, like, is that really all it takes, is just to recant your statement? Like, you can confess to killing somebody really brutally or, like, having something to do with it and then be like, nah, I was just kidding. Never mind. Apparently so. Apparently. So, for some fucking reason, Yoron was on ABC with Chris Cuomo in 2006 and he was like, I am completely innocent and fuck Natalie Holloway's family for treating me like this and putting me through this. Like, fuck you, Yoron. Fuck you. You are terrible. I hate you. And he was just, yeah, I mean, he was just disgusting. He was, like, the victim in his brain, and he was like, yeah, I'm fine, and I didn't do anything. And then for some other fucking reason, he did a Fox News interview in 2006, and he gave his story again. Like, he just wanted to get out there, I guess, and keep giving his story, and it was just a slightly different variation of it, where he said he was innocent, but he did spend that night with Natalie, and he just left her behind on the beach. So, like, he has so many different angles. Nobody believes a word that comes out of his mouth. He's literally just the most unreliable person because he changes little parts of his story and he'll, like, just adapt what he has to make himself sound like the victim and make himself sound innocent. He is very manipulative. His lawyer was like, yeah, he's kind of crazy. Like, his lawyer has said before that he just has, like, this warped reality where, like, he'll take things the way he wants to take them and do whatever he wants to do. So, interesting. So, at this point, there's not a lot of movement in the case until November of 2007, when Yoron and the Calpo brothers are arrested again after, quote, new incriminating evidence, end quote, comes out. And they were arrested on suspicion of involvement in voluntary manslaughter and causing serious bodily harm that resulted in Natalie's death. But I have no idea what the new incriminating evidence was. It has not been released. I have no idea what it was. So we just have to live with that for the rest of our lives, wondering. But on December 18th, the Aruban authorities just randomly were like, okay, this case is closed. And they released all the suspects, and that was it. So now the Aruban authorities are being even more criticized. Nancy Grace is fucking pissed. Everybody's like, why did you do that? Why did you just let all three of your main suspects go? Why are you closing the case? We still don't have any answers. Why are you just randomly deciding that this case is closed? I mean, when I tell you Nancy Grace was pissed, Nancy Grace was pissed for this whole case. So I don't usually side with her, but I sided with her on this one. I did. And so Euron is just free out there to do whatever he wants, which is going to be bad for a lot of people. So now that he's free and he's probably like, fuck you guys, I got away with murder and, you know, maybe whatever else he did to Natalie, he feels unstoppable. And there's this hidden camera footage of Euron in the Netherlands, and he was like Netherlands. And he was like confessing to getting rid of Natalie's body and saying that like if she was ever found, he would be in deep shit. But then guess how he gets out of it? He tells the police that he was just lying. He was just joking around with his buddies. He was just fucking having a good time with his friends. And that works. Somehow that works. And they're like, okay, that's fine. And so now he's feeling extra cocky. So he uses this case for financial gain. He calls up Fox News again. He's like, hey, I will come on your show and I will confess. And they're like, fuck yes. And you know what else? We will pay you $25,000. And to that, I just say, what the fuck? If anything, Euron should be paying to go on the news. I mean, I know that's not how the First Amendment works. He should just be able to talk and like not get paid because he's confessing to being involved in a missing persons case, which means he did something wrong. So why are we offering him $25,000? In November of 2008, Euron shows up on Fox News again, and he has this whole news story, completely different than anything he has ever said before. And he claims that he sold Natalie into sex trafficking that night. Yep, just out of the middle of nowhere, this is his new story. He says that some random fucking guy offered him $10,000 for a blonde woman. And he's like, I have one of those. He said he had no idea who the man was, but that he just wanted a blonde girl. And Euron's like, I got one. And this guy said, I have money. And so they just fucking traded. And he just left Natalie on the beach. And he said he got, like, I think $10,000 for it. So that's pretty fucked up. And he tells the story so fucking weird and so gross with this slight like little smirk and like this like, I'm totally fucking with you look on his face. Like he looks like he's being such a little fucking shit. And guess what? He was. Right after the interview, he told Fox News that he did it just for the money and that none of it was true. And Fox News still aired it, but they had a disclaimer on it and they were like, none of this is true. We just wanted to air it to show you what kind of person this guy is. But like, what the fuck? And I did this like side deep dive because Euron actually was connected to some sex trafficking in Thailand. So a lot of people were like, okay, this still could be worth investigating, even though he said it wasn't true. Like, it wouldn't be unlike him. And the timeline adds up. He operated under the name fucking Murphy Jenkins. And I just also want to say, why do we have people who are known human traffickers? Why aren't they all just in prison? Why do we have people who are known criminals? Why aren't they just in prison? Like, why are we putting all of these innocent people in prison when there's people like this who we know out there exist? It just, oh my God, it literally like gets me so fired up. Anyway, so he was under investigation in Thailand for being involved with this sex trafficking gang and for like disappearances of a bunch of young women that he had recruited for the gang. I read somewhere that he made $13,000 for every girl that he would recruit into this, and he wouldn't like kidnap them. He would just be like, oh, you're gonna get this amazing modeling job in Europe. But most of the girls that went, and of course they were all like vulnerable young girls who just needed money or wanted an opportunity. Like, of course, that's how it always goes. And most of the ones who went were never seen or heard from again. Like, this man is fucking trash. Even if he didn't do anything to Natalie, even if he has nothing to do with Natalie's case, he is fucking garbage and I hate him. He has so much blood on his hands and he does not care. So, all right. You remember that $1 million reward for information on Natalie? Euron's like, Oh, I have information on Natalie. And coincidentally, this is right after his dad just drops dead. No more word on that. No more investigation on that. His dad literally just dies. So anyway, Euron's like, yeah, I have information on Natalie. So he emails Natalie's mom's lawyer and says he will tell her where Natalie's body is for $25,000 up front and then another $250,000 after. And Natalie's mom, Beth, is like, okay, hell yeah. And to that I say, what the fuck? Why are you going to give this man money? Obviously, she's not going to use her money. She's not going to use the actual reward money. And she, like, got the FBI involved and stuff. But, like, why are you still going to give this man money? Like, what the fuck? So she calls the FBI. They get involved. They arrange a deal to meet with him and see what he has to say. And he leads them to a house that his dad owned. And that this is the house that his dad buried Natalie under. She's underneath the foundation of the house. And they did it while the house was still under construction. So they pay him. They pay Euron $25,000. And then he admits that he was lying and he goes to Peru to spend his new $25,000. Like, it's that easy for him. And for some reason, they're just, like, letting him go to Peru. For some reason, after committing this fraud, they just let him go. And this is going to be fucking detrimental. Because while he's in Peru, exactly 5 years to the date, on May 30th, 2010, Euron Vandersloot murdered a young woman in Peru. But before we get there, let's take another quick smoke break because you're gonna need it. Guys, it is Oscar season. We have some shit to talk. The nominations are out and we all have feelings about them, and what better way to discuss those feelings than with four of your best girlies on their podcast, Oscar Bait. Maddie, Libby, Julia, and Emily talk about this year's contenders and which films they think will take home the Oscars. One listen, and they will soon be your new best friends. You can check out their podcast, OscarBait, wherever you get your podcasts, or at anchor.fm/oscar-bait for their coverage of movies like Minari, Promising Young Woman, and even some bonus Golden Globes content. You will not regret it. Love you, girls. So, Euron just gets this $25,000 that he stole from Natalie's family, and he goes to Peru and he's out at the casino. And yeah, of course, he spends all $25,000 of it, and he meets this woman named Stephanie Flores Ramirez. And they were what appeared to be consensually flirting and, like, hanging out, playing cards together and stuff, and they were seen on tape walking from the casino to Euron's hotel and into his hotel room together at 5:12 in the morning. It is unclear what all happened in there. There's a couple theories, a couple speculations. So the main running one is that Stephanie was like, you look familiar. And while Euron was in the bathroom or something, she went through his things and found out he was, like, Euron, who was involved with the Natalie Holloway case. So she, like, looked him up, or, like, looked up Natalie Holloway and stuff. And then when he came out of the bathroom, he saw that, got enraged, and then he killed her. That's it. And they were like, oh fuck, when they found her body, they were like, oh, this is Euron Vandersloot's room. Like, this is our guy. Like, we have to find him. So all the local cops were like, oh fuck, oh man, we are on the hunt for Euron Vandersloot right now. And a couple days later, he's found and he's arrested, while he's in a cab in Chile. He had dyed his hair red and he was just, like, trying to hide out and be a different person for a little while. But, like, bro, a dead woman was found in your hotel room. Like, you made that hotel room under your name and then you just left her body in it. Like, that's on you, bro. So he's arrested and he's held in prison, a max security prison. And on June 27th, 2010, Euron is indicted on charges of wire fraud and extortion for the $25,000 he got and the $250,000 he was trying to get. And so the fucking million-dollar question is, why didn't they arrest him before he was able to escape to Peru and kill Stephanie? Why did they have to wait? Why didn't they arrest him right then and there? Like, if they would have done that, then Stephanie would still be alive, and maybe they'd have enough to fucking get him for Natalie. So anyway, he does get indicted on those charges. So on January 11th, now we are in 2012, Euron pleaded guilty to the murder of Stephanie Flores, and he kind of pretended to feel guilty, and he kind of, like, apologized, but I don't believe a fucking word that comes out of his mouth, and he had to. Like, he had no other option. Like I said, a dead woman is found in his hotel room. Like, there's no getting out of that. But here's the kicker. His lawyers blamed him murdering Stephanie on, quote, extreme psychological trauma from the long-running Holloway saga, end quote. Saga. Are you fucking serious? This girl went missing and you were the last person who saw her and you sent everybody in the world on fucking wild goose chases. You're still the lead suspect and everybody knows that you had something to do with it and you're gonna call it just the saga. Also, like, you've confessed to killing her, getting rid of her body, selling her into sex trafficking. So, like, even if you had nothing to do with it, Euron is still a sex trafficker, he's still fucking disgusting, and I still fucking hate him. So he was sentenced to 28 years in prison, and he was ordered to pay $75,000 to Stephanie's family, which is not enough time in jail at all, but at least he's locked up for now. But there's still no justice for Natalie. Their hope is to be able to just find some evidence to convict Euron of killing her or abducting Natalie so that he ends up locked away for life, like he fucking should be, because he's a terrible person. But they're just still investigating it. The day before Euron was sentenced, a judge in Alabama ruled Natalie officially dead at the request of her father and against the wishes of her mom, because Natalie's dad was like, we have no proof that she's still alive. Why don't we just get some closure and declare her legally dead and we can use the money that was for her college for her younger brother and help us all out. But then Natalie's mom was like, we have no proof that she's dead either, and we have to have hope and hold out for her. Which, like, that's a tough fucking predicament. I could not imagine being a parent in this situation. I couldn't imagine being a parent at all, but, like, especially if your kid goes missing, because what do you fucking do in those circumstances? Like, I think I would literally spend my whole life defining them like they have, but I kind of agree with her dad. Like, at some point, you have to be like, okay, we need to get closure from this. We can't be driving ourselves crazy for what it's been now, like, 16 years. So, whew, it's a tough predicament. But there's not that many, like, wild and crazy theories about this one, because most people think it's pretty cut and dry and that Euron is guilty in some capacity. There's a lot of people on Reddit who really tried to, like, clear the names of the Calpo brothers and say that they had nothing to do with it and that Euron just, like, used them as, like, just a ride to get around town or just, like, somebody for drugs or whatever. But you're as innocent as your most guilty friend, my guy. Like, if you know what Euron did and you haven't told anybody, that's just as guilty. So, I don't know. There was also this Oxygen series that Natalie's dad was, like, a big part of. And it's essentially, I didn't watch it. It's 6 episodes and I have ADHD. So, it didn't work out for me. But it's essentially, like, Natalie's dad gets this phone call from a guy who's living with Euron's friend and knows all the details. And so this guy who calls Natalie's dad is like, hey, I think I could get, like, some details and some closure about your daughter's death, like, or your daughter's disappearance. Like, I really want to work with you. And the reason he says is because he has 2 daughters himself and that he couldn't imagine. Like, why do you have to have daughters to respect women? Why do you have to have daughters to know that you should, like, help find a missing kid? Like, why is that the qualification? Why can't you just care about women? I don't know. I know that's kind of, like, bold of me to ask of a man. I don't know. Most people, including me, believe that Euron killed her and then had her body dumped in the ocean and had ties who were able to just help him cover it up. Which is just a theory. It's just a theory. Don't sue me. But it pretty much just fucking makes the most sense. Since Natalie's gone missing, every single time that remains are found, her family gets their hopes up for a few months while they wait for the DNA evidence just to be let down, literally every single time. Euron has confessed to inmates, he has confessed to, like, he's confessed in so many different ways. If you Google Euron Vandersloot confession, you get, like, 80 different videos at 80 different times because he has so many different stories, he has so many different, like, he's literally just crazy. And his lawyer, like I said, his lawyer has said before that, like, he's confessed to killing John F. Kennedy. Like, he just has this, like, tick and he'll just say whatever he can to, like, say it. I don't know. I don't get it. And I don't know. Just the way that he killed on the 5-year anniversary of Natalie's death, literally gives me the heebie-jeebies. Like, that is so fucking sick. It's like he was, like, marking the date. I don't know if he did it on purpose. I have no idea. But it just feels like he was like, it's been 5 years. I gotta do it again. And it literally makes me sick. Makes me so sick. Whew. I want to know what you guys think happened in this case, because I think I understand why it's such a big case. Like, I kind of do. I consider it, like, solved pretty much, because everybody agrees on what happened. It's just finding that evidence. And they've explored every theory. They've explored everything else. And it all just always comes back to Euron. So I think this one's, like, unofficially, is that a word? Unofficially solved, because it was Euron. Don't sue me, but it was Euron. And so it's frustrating, and it's frustrating for everybody. I see why it, like, gets a lot of attention. I also think it's because she's a rich white girl, but that's for a different episode, different podcast. But I don't know. Tell me what you guys think happened, because it's fucking whack. I think everybody's going to agree that it was Euron, but if you have any theories, I'd love to hear them, because everything I like tried to search, like, all the crazy Reddit threads, and pretty much everybody's like, nah, this was Euron. Like, there's no outside theory. So somebody come up with one and let's investigate it and let's get on this. Thank you. If you have any information that could lead to Natalie or anything at all, any ideas or anything, you can contact your local FBI office or the US Embassy in Venezuela at 011-58-212-907-8335. This one fucking crazy, you guys. I will be thinking about it for a long time. It's one that will definitely, I will have nightmares about. I can just imagine them already, because where is she also? Like, where is her body? What do they do with it? Like, I don't have any answers, and that will drive me absolutely insane. My heart goes out to her family so much, because I literally could not imagine. On that note, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your day, and rest of your freaking week, or I hope you have a great 420. I know in the earlier in the episode, I said, like, to maybe not listen on Monday and listen on Tuesday instead, but you could also just have two 420s. I mean, like, nobody's gonna stop you. Time isn't real anyway. So if you just do it twice, it doesn't matter. Or it could just be every day. It doesn't matter. You make your own rules. So have a great day. And I will see you next week. Like I said, I'm working on the whole co-host thing. So just give me some time and have a wonderful freaking day. Bye.